right now when my kids buy something in Roblox, they're paying Robux for it. Do they really own it? I don't know. But that's why things like the blockchain, obviously, that you and I are very much involved in, like that's where I think it gets super interesting when it's actually, I own this and I can prove that I own it. It's on the blockchain. It is my asset, it's a new investment vehicle. So yeah, I think it's gonna progress.
Welcome to Profit to the People, the official podcast of Republic, where we believe you have the power to invest in the future you believe in. I'm your host, Lisa Carmen Wang, and I'll be taking you behind the scenes to meet the team, founders, and investors in our community who share their insights on the future of investing and how they're bringing profit back to the people. To learn how you can invest, head over to republic.co and follow us on all social channels at Join Republic and at Lisa Carmen Wang.
Hey everyone, today I'm here with Kathy Hackle. She is a globally recognized metaverse expert and CEO of the Future Intelligence Group, a leading metaverse consultancy working with the world's top brands on metaverse growth strategies, including NFTs, gaming, virtual fashion, and further extending their brands into virtual worlds. She's been dubbed the godmother of the metaverse and is currently writing her upcoming book, The Metaverse Economy. She's the host of Adweek's Metaverse Marketing Podcast, Dean of Republic Realm Academy, and she has been named Big Think's Top 10 Most Influential Women in Tech in 2020 and 2021. Kathy, welcome to the show.
So excited to be here.
Awesome. So to get us started, can you explain to us in the simplest terms, what is the metaverse?
So in the simplest terms, it's a convergence of physical and digital. Right. So we are someone in the physical world. We tend to be a different persona in some ways in the digital world. So it's finally our two lives, right, converging. So it's like our digital lifestyle catching up to our physical lives. It is enabled by many different technologies. So the metaverse is not only virtual reality, which a lot of people tend to only think about. It's enabled by technologies like augmented reality, virtual reality, like I mentioned, which are entry points, but blockchain, of course, big, big part of it. Blockchain, NFTs, AI, robotics, 5G, edge computing. So when we're talking about the metaverse, we are talking about the future of the internet, like what comes next, right? And I walk people through the past to take them to the future. I said, Web 1.0, connected information that gave us the internet, changed a lot of things. Web 2.0, connected people that gave us social media and the sharing economy and e-commerce and changed a lot of things, gave us some of the tech juggernauts of today. And now we're evolving again into Web 3.0, which very, very basically connects people, places, and things, or people, spaces, and assets, sometimes on the blockchain, you know, hopefully a lot more on the blockchain. And that Web 3.0 era that we're going into, right, is what kind of opens up this, the road or the path towards the metaverse. So yeah, I think it's a term that we're all still trying to define. There's no agreed upon definition. But I do see it as this convergence of physical and digital and the future of the internet.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that really sparked my interest was really this understanding, to your point, that it's not just VR, but we're already spending all of our time in some ways scrolling on our phones, mm-hmm. on our laptops. Like we're already in the 2D digital world. And so it's just a matter of time before it just makes sense that it becomes more immersive.
Yeah. It's almost like you have to envision it like a 3D internet of sorts, right? And sometimes it will be in some virtual spaces, but I also see, like, I have a pretty expansive view of the metaverse that includes the physical world, right? So eventually when we move away from phones into some type of wearable glasses, you know, whatever it is that, you know, that Apple brings to market, we'll move into something else. You know, it'll be a process, right? Not everyone got the first iPhone when it came out, right? So it took some time for people to be like, okay, I want an iPhone, right? So I think it'll be the same. It'll be an evolution. So I'm seeing the metaverse as not only these virtual spaces, but also the physical world. And it's going to be like a 3D internet that's all around us. So it's, you know, that's pretty significant.
Definitely. So what prompted you to get into the business of the metaverse?
This is what I tell people. I've been in metaverse related industries for almost a decade. That's a lot of time in meta time, right? In metaverse time. So I came from media. I was in media for a very long time, then went into corporate comms, started to learn more about the business side of business and got really interested. Then eventually got introduced to technology, like started working in technology in the live streaming days. So there were companies like Periscope and Meerkat that came out several years ago. And I was one of the first people in there and started getting connected with, you know, Facebook and Twitter and the web 2.0 giants. But then got introduced to VR. And I said, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. Made a very hard pivot into VR and AR, and it's been crazy ever since. You know, went to HTC Vive, worked as a VR evangelist during the partnership with Steven Spielberg's adaptation of Ready Player One, went over to Magic Leap, which used to be one of the most secretive startups in the history of startups. They raised a lot of money. A lot of us thought it was the next Apple. Went to work there, and our chief futurist was Neil Stephenson, who coined the term metaverse, right? Then went over to Amazon Web Services, and some of the many things I did there was working in large scale gaming simulations. So it's been an evolution, right? It's really been an evolution. I am not lying or joking when I say that I've been talking to executives about the metaverse. Maybe I was using a different term for years, right? It used to be the slide that they wanted to jump over. They're like, oh, sci-fi, whatever. They wanted to jump over it. But now they're like, wait a second. She was talking about this. Maybe we should chat with her. So how did I get into it? You know, I think there were breadcrumbs along the way that led me there. And the only way I can describe it is I recognized the rocket when I saw one and I got on it. And I've never looked back.
What would you say are some of the forces that have combined to make it a perfect storm such that the metaverse really blew up this past year?
Yeah. So obviously, I mean, the pandemic accelerated a lot of stuff, right? Because we all had to do meetings on Zoom and kind of be distributed workforces. So I think that was one. Obviously, the acceleration with cryptocurrency, more and more people getting into it, you know, the increase in value, NFTs just exploding, right? That's one. Advances in augmented reality, obviously virtual reality has plays like 5G, the fact that we're getting, you know, that's kind of being activated in a stronger way. So I think there was just like all these convergence, like the word would be convergence, right? All these different things happening together that accelerated us. And, you know, even for me, from a metaverse perspective, right? The fact that a company like Facebook decides to change their name to Meta, right? Which a lot of us have many conflicting feelings about, you know, to be honest. But the one thing I do think is that when that happened, the term metaverse was introduced to millions of people that probably wouldn't have heard the term otherwise. Whether we have conflicting feelings or not, it did give a lot of, let's say, validation to some of the work that a lot of us were doing when that term just kind of like went mainstream and now it's everywhere. It's a bit of a hype cycle right now, but yeah, I will say that the day of the rebranding, I have never seen my phone do what it did. Like I literally felt like it was going to melt or something. So
how do people get started in the metaverse? You know, how do they choose the metaverse that they want to get involved in?
One of the things that people can do to get started, right? For example, at Republic Realm, I'm the dean of Republic Realm Academy. We've got an academy that is seeking to bring professional education, executive education for people that are not highly technical, but people that want to level up, right? And they want to understand metaverse, want to understand NFTs and virtual real estate. So it could be professionals within our organization. It could be people that are trying to switch careers and they're really called to metaverse and Web3. And like, that's a way to kind of start to educate themselves. It could be students that want to complement what they're already learning because they might be taking a blockchain business course, but there's nothing more, right? So yeah, I think things like Republic Realm Academy, allowing executives and professionals that are not necessarily technical to have access to this type of education, I think is important. We're building a community as well. As we build the academy, we want to create an alumni community, you know, where people connect, where there's going to be potential job opportunities. And, you know, for me, it's just exciting to think about what are the types of collaborations that are going to come from putting hundreds of people interested in metaverse and Web3 that want to level up their education, putting them together to learn. And then, you know, in the Discord, just kind of, I'm just really excited to see what comes from that.
Awesome. And when it comes to brands, what are some of the biggest asks right now? Like, how are they trying to get involved and make a name for themselves in the metaverse?
Yeah. So I do a lot of work with brands. You know, I always joke and say that you've seen my work. You just don't know it's my work, right? Because some of these brands are pretty secretive. But yeah, I think with brands, the biggest thing has been, I would say, education with across the organization on what metaverse is. What does it mean for the brand? And then, you know, obviously doing some type of marketing activation, that's normally how they start. They plant their flag and they said, we did X in the metaverse. And then normally they start working with me to really think about a holistic strategy. I try to kind of work with them on really thinking about the next 6, 12, 18, 2 to 5 years, depending on how far out they want to go. Also working on, you know, if they are serious and they understand that this is the future of the internet, what are the capabilities that they need to start to have in-house? So yeah, I work with brands on many different levels, whether it is, you know, marketing activations or full-fledged strategies. But I think the biggest ask is, what does this mean for my brand? Like, what does my brand become in the metaverse? And every brand's answer is going to be different.
What are some of the, or can you talk about some of the brands that you've worked with?
Yeah, I can definitely talk about two of them. Clinique, which is part of the Estee Lauder companies. Clinique was the first brand in Estee Lauder companies to do an NFT. So with them, what we did is we co-created the strategy for their first NFT, which was called Meta Optimus. It was not an auction. It was more of a giveaway. So the NFT actually was focused on their loyalty community and allowing the people that are, you know, Clinique loyal fans to enter the metaverse with the brand. So in order for them to, you know, to apply to get these three unique NFTs, there are only three, they had to transact in the form of stories, right? So they would submit their stories of optimism through social media. And then we had, you know, a group of people select the top three winners. And then we had Emilia Clark and Melissa Barrera, who are Clinique ambassadors, announced the winners. And what the winners got was not just the NFT, which is beautiful in itself, but the utility behind the NFT was 10 years of makeup, which, you know, to me, it's pretty useful, right? And then also early access to some of their products that are just sold out. So there's a lipstick called Black Honey, which they've made for years. And it just went crazy on TikTok, is sold out. You can't get your hands on it, cannot buy it. But these three NFT winners actually have early access to that, you know, to that lipstick. So things like that, I think, that bring utility and are focused on community are exciting.
So what's happening is that they are combining the digital and the physical world. So this is not a digital lipstick. It's a real lipstick.
It's a real lipstick. Yeah. You know, eventually I'm sure we'll get there to, you know, more of that, you know, direct to avatar, which I love and I've written extensively about. But yeah, in this case, it was three NFTs that signify that you were the first, you know, the first to own this special Clinique NFT. So that's one. And another brand that I worked with is Procter & Gamble Beauty. They wanted to create a virtual world for CES. Obviously, you know, CES this year, you know, I canceled my plans to go. A lot of people canceled. They weren't there. So I worked with them to create the strategy for Beauty Sphere, which was a virtual world on the browser. So it wasn't on Roblox or, you know, or Minecraft or anywhere else. It was on the browser. And it turned out really well. You know, obviously doing something on the browser is a little bit more limiting than some of the graphics that you might have in some of the other platforms, but it was still really beautiful, really well done. It was kind of a hub, let's say, for some of the content that was showcased at CES. So I work with brands on everything from virtual fashion to virtual worlds, to NFTs, to metaverse strategies. And I think the coolest thing for me is that I've just been able to kind of go from strategy all the way to implementation and now have all these development capabilities. So it's been really exciting.
When, like, for example, I was reading about Gucci. So they're selling digital bags. Mm-hmm. They've created this platform on the Roblox platform that are, and those digital bags are more expensive than the actual physical bag. Can you talk about the economics of that and how brands are really thinking about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's such a special, unique case because it was the Gucci Garden on Roblox and they had these the Dionysus purse, which in physical form is about $1,500, and the virtual one in Roblox sold for $3,000 plus. So that was a really interesting case, but that's a signal, right? That was a big signal. Whenever I talk to the brands that I work with, is like what's happening in the space is virtual to virtual commerce, right? So for many years, we've done physical to physical commerce. I go to the store, I get a physical item, I go home. Or even with e-commerce, I'm ordering something physical that arrives in my home, right? But with these gaming spaces, what has been, you know, been done, you know, for years, right, is virtual to virtual commerce, where I pay to buy a virtual item that I use, and I'm normally using some type of currency within the game, like whether it's V-Bucks or Robux. So the enabling and the evolution of commerce into virtual to virtual. But at the end of the day, what does this really mean? This is about digital ownership of digital assets, right? Which is very important to younger generations. And it is about direct to avatar becoming a new business model, a new opportunity for direct to consumer. So yeah, I think that there's a lot of things right there in everything I just said. But definitely what always sticks in my mind is digital ownership of digital assets, right? Right now, when my kids buy something in Roblox, they're paying Robux for it. Do they really own it? I don't know. But that's why things like the blockchain, obviously, that you and I are very much involved in, like that's where I think it gets super interesting when it's actually, I own this and I can prove that I own it. It's on the blockchain. It is my asset, it's a new investment vehicle. So yeah, I think it's gonna progress.
Let's talk about digital land ownership.
Yeah.
Right. People are buying more and more digital land. How would someone think about that in terms of the, you know, the ownership value? Do they think about it the same way they think about real estate?
Some things are similar and some things are different, right? It does seem like location is still an important thing, both in the physical and the virtual. So in the virtual world, if you buy a plot of land close to Snoop Dogg's plot of land, it's probably going to be more expensive than one that isn't as close. So location still plays a part, right? But I think it's just a new investment vehicle. It's, you know, I almost view it myself as kind of a way of potentially owning a future piece of the internet, right? So Web 2, I could go and buy a domain. Like I could own a domain. Yeah, you own your domain. But what else did you own? You didn't really own your Twitter handle. You didn't own your Twitter, you know, your Facebook page. Like that was just not yours. It could be taken away from you. So I think it's different now that we're actually able to own some of these, you know, parcels inside worlds. And yeah, for me, it's a bet. It's not financial advice. Like anyone that is putting money into virtual real estate is money that they're willing to lose, right?
And when you say location, what are the different locations? How do people vet it out?
Personally, what I do when I see some of these virtual real estate projects is I look at their roadmap. What is their roadmap? What is their, you know, what is the goal here? Who's behind them, right? I also like to know who's behind these. That doesn't mean that, you know, that should be the only thing, right? Because obviously, you know, we got Theranos, Elizabeth Holmes, right? Like a lot of people did their due diligence and thought she was, you know, she was being honest. But so I try to look at roadmap. I try to look at who's behind it, try to look at like any partnerships they might have. And yeah, and then try to decide, you know, is this somewhere where I want to put my money and invest in? I believe in the project. I believe in the founders. I believe in the longevity and kind of the way they're activating, you know, partners. So then I go in and invest. And I think it's very similar. I think people need to look at that. You know, some people might just want to invest in, you know, all of them. There's many, you know, virtual worlds. Some people might be more targeted and say, okay, I'm going to focus on the top three by number of users, by number of investment or what have you. So I think everyone's approach is going to be a little bit different.
And what are some of the top worlds? There's Decentraland, Sandbox. What else should people be looking at?
Yeah, so definitely Decentraland, the Sandbox, Somnium Space. I like Somnium Space quite a bit. And we're building kind of a small campus for Republic Realm Academy in Somnium Space. You can actually visit it right now. If you go to the website, it says go there and it'll take you and show you our little campus. So it's very exciting. I like Star Atlas as well, which is more of a game, but does have a virtual land component. High Street as well, which is a commerce focused virtual world. There's many different ones, right? Upland as well, which I do a lot of work with. So there's just many, many different options. Depends on kind of what you're into. It's really interesting to see kind of how it's all evolving. It does seem like there's a virtual world, a decentralized virtual world popping up every 5 minutes, right? But yeah, you know, you just have to do your due diligence.
And if you were to look out into the future, as you mentioned, all of these new virtual worlds are popping up. Do you imagine that there will be thousands, millions of different virtual worlds? Or do you think that there will be some top players that'll really, you know, centralize where people visit?
So I think there will be top players, right? I think there might be a lot of niche worlds. I think there will be some top players that will become very prominent. I do think that the ones that succeed might be the ones that form alliances, where there is some type of interoperability. So I think that that'll be really interesting to look at. And you know, when I think about the future is like, I'm working towards building an open and decentralized future, the open and centralized metaverse. That is the dream, right? That is the hope. That being said, I don't know if it will all be decentralized, right? I think what we might end up having is a big part of it that is decentralized, that does allow for some level of interoperability, but there might be some centralized walled gardens that might exist that you might have a good reason to go to, right? There might be a specific reason why you go there. You know, of course, I'm building towards open decentralized, but in the grand scheme of things, is it all going to be decentralized? I'm not sure if it all will be. I do think interoperability is going to be important. Standards across virtual goods, anything we can do to create a standard that is agreed upon. That's kind of how I envision the future and kind of what I'm seeing.
And for those who are new to the metaverse, does every single virtual world have its own unique token?
That's interesting. So most of them do, right? Most of them do have their unique token. Like, will it stay like that? I don't know. Possibly. I think it's going to depend. It's been interesting to watch, like, you know, Mana and Sand just increase in value, right? With everything that's been happening. So it's not only the investment I'm making in the virtual real estate, but it's also in, you know, in their tokens. So I'm not sure, you know, I'm not sure. Like, does that mean that we're going to end up having a gazillion tokens? I don't know. Is that feasible? Is that like, is there a scale there? And is there longevity in there? I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's where the interoperability conversation becomes really important, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. Because otherwise we'll have, you know, millions of different tokens, different essentially currencies.
That How do you manage really that translate? On your wallet, right? It's like, that would be a little crazy. So I don't know. We'll see.
And do some of these different metaverses, is it that, like, especially the niche ones, do they have their own unique value system? Or, you know, what makes it such that it makes sense for there to be your own unique niche metaverse?
I think that will be determined by the community, right? I think the community will determine the value of what that niche world is and the value of if they have a token. I always say this, and I say, you know, community and authenticity are kings in this Web 3.0 space. Like, if you're not building with community in mind and being authentic and truly understanding what decentralization and openness means, then you're not getting it. You're still stuck in the Web 2 ways. So I think that the community that aligns around that specific initiative is the one that will assign value. I'll give you two examples, and they're not virtual worlds, but I think it's relevant. So I'll start by saying I don't play golf. That's just not my sport, or I don't seek going golfing. That's not something I do. But regardless, I bought a leisure membership to the Lynx DAO, right? Which pretty much is a DAO that is going to buy a golf course somewhere. I don't even know where. I don't even play golf. But I bought a membership because I was like, okay, I'm really interested in exploring the future of the country club. And what does this really mean? You know, at the end of the day, I'm making a bet here. I'm making an investment. Do I believe in the founders? Yeah, I do. I'm like, okay, I'm very curious, like, to see what happens with this. Same thing with Flyfish, which is an NFT restaurant that Gary Vaynerchuk is one of the founders that's going to be launching in 2023. It's a fish. It's mostly focused on fish. I don't eat that much fish, but I don't care. I bought the membership because it allows me to be one of the people that can make a reservation in the restaurant. And I'm trying to understand all these pioneering use cases, right? And trying to say, okay, what benefit does it give me? What's the utility to me? And I find that there is value there, right? So I am part of their community. I think there is value in what they're doing. So once again, that value will be assigned by the community.
Got it. And so for you, there's both the virtual benefit of the community, but also the physical benefit of essentially the golf course.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like, of course, there is that physical benefit of the restaurant and the golf course, but, you know, because it's valuable to me, not because I like to golf, but because I'm like, okay, well, can I do this? I can maybe have business meetings here or whatever. So I do think that, you know, everyone is going to be different, right? Everyone's going to, sometimes some people might be like, I'm not going to spend money on that. For me, it was valuable. I wanted to spend money on it because I saw something of value, something that's of utility to me.
So, I mean, I think if we dive into this, the buzzword community, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, everyone's talking about community and like what that really means, because it seems like a lot of it is with NFTs, with the metaverse, you're getting membership into a certain community.
It is. But, you know, when you go into some of these Discord servers, like, there is the members only channel, but then there's other channels where not everyone there is a member, but they're still fans. Right. Mm-hmm. So it is about the future of community, but also the future of fandom. And who do you, you know, who do you align yourself with? Who do you aspire to be? Like, do you aspire to be a Board A, or do you aspire to be whatever it is, right? So I think there is a certain level there of things that you might be a fan of, might have certain loyalty, you might aspire to be. So I think that there's some interesting psychology there as well.
And then typically the business model is not the same. So call it Web 2 was if yeah. you're a fan, maybe you become a subscription member of the community, or, you know, maybe you buy the merch. So it yeah. seems like the business model of the metaverse the whole community is different.
It is, because you actually have a stake in it. You own something, right? Whereas in Web 2.0, like if I'm a fan of a brand and I go to Twitter and follow them and like them, they don't even own that, and I'm giving up my data. So I think the model is a little bit different, right? You know, if I have a Bored Ape, I own the IP. That's pretty exciting. It could be the next Mickey Mouse. So I think there is some difference, some very big difference there in how people are congregating around some of these projects and what do you really own, right? And for brands, like they've been building on borrowed land for a very long time. When they used to be on Facebook and they used to get great engagement, and then things changed, like Meta or Facebook, you know, change things, and then the Facebook page was nothing. They couldn't get any engagement. So I think it's been interesting for brands to learn from that experience and say, well, maybe I should be buying my own plot of land in Decentraland and building my own world. I'm not saying that that's the only thing they should do, but building my own store. So I think there is this time of exploration and pioneering where brands are trying to figure out, where is that place that I'm going to engage with the people that love my brand, the people, the community that enjoys my brand. So yeah, it's definitely a lot of time for exploration.
And so would you recommend it for people who are entrepreneurs, who are building brands, that they look into the metaverse and potentially build their own storefront, their own place yeah. of gathering?
Why not? Right. For me, it's like, if you've got the disposable income to do so without, you know, without going broke, then go ahead. Why not? Right. We're not all Paris Hilton. We're not all going to do a world in Roblox with DJs and yachts, but why not? You can set up your own little, you know, your own little office in Roblox if you wanted to. So I don't see why not. Right.
Awesome. Where can we visit you in the metaverse?
So I'm working right now on several of my worlds, you know, like futuristic concepts. I was talking to one of my developers yesterday. I said, look, I want it to be like a meeting area, but not an office or a conference room. Like, I don't want people to come in here and be like in a conference room, like, blah. Right. I want it to be futuristic and fun, not super expansive, because that's not necessarily what I'm doing, but I want to be able to, you know, to take people on these tours and say, hey, come and meet with me. We're going to have a meeting in my, you know, my parcel in the sandbox, or I'm going to have a meeting in my Decentraland. Like, it just kind of just almost like, for me, it's almost going to be like a tour. Right, of taking people to all these different places, to places that I've built for myself, you know, and have meetings there. So yeah, nothing should stop us if you can pull it off and do it. Why not?
Any last things that you want to talk about in terms of just thoughts about the future of the metaverse?
Yeah, I think the big thing for me is, and I say this in a lot of places, is that, you know, in the metaverse, we are all world builders, and now is our time to build. You know, and build doesn't mean that you have to have development, like be a developer. Like, build can be many different things. So I want, you know, women, people of color, anyone that's a minority to feel welcome in this future and know that they can build it as well. One thing that was really beautiful for me to see, it was really funny, it was Reese Witherspoon tweeting out saying, in the future, we're all going to have an avatar that we're going to use for fashion and all this and that. And are you planning for that? And for me, it was nice to see that it was Reese Witherspoon, a woman, instead of a male tech CEO of, you know, of a big tech juggernaut. Like, for me, that was beautiful. Like, to see that there's a little bit of a, like, there's still a lot of broskies, right? There's still a lot happening with men in the space, but I do feel that there is winds of change and that we as women are supporting each other. And yeah, and for me, it's like, I welcome you into this future. Come and build it with me.
Awesome. So that first step, you would recommend just having someone check out the Roblox website or check out Decentraland and just explore it?
Yeah. Join a Discord server, start to build community there. Play Roblox. If you have kids, get in there and actually play with them. You will learn a lot. You know, if you don't have a crypto wallet, open your MetaMask or Rainbow, whatever it is that you want to open. If you have some disposable income, buy your first NFT. It doesn't have to be a multi-$100, you know, $100,000 NFT. So little things you can start doing there to kind of be part of the community and start building, right? So yeah, I think that there's a lot of opportunities.
And last question for you, what does bringing profit to the people mean to you?
Oof, that's a lot. I always look at creators, right? And everyone's using the term creator economy, right? But really looking at enabling, more and more ways for creators to get paid what they're worth and to get access to, you know, to their communities and monetizing those communities and having those communities feel like they have a stake in the, you know, in this creator's career. So I don't know. It's really interesting to kind of watch that slowly start happening. I'm writing an article right now on creator coins and what does it mean? What are the advantages? What are the potential pitfalls? So I think that there's a lot of things that will happen this year over the next 2 years, I think, related to creators and how they're going to be able to kind of profit, let's say, from everything that is happening right now in a much more useful way than having to, you know, work for clicks or work for subscriptions or so, because we all know that they burn out. They burn out quickly. So,
well, thank you so much for all of your work in the metaverse. Continue being a pioneer and being a role model for all of us. And we will see you in the metaverse.
I'll see you in the metaverse. Thank you.
This podcast is provided for educational purposes only by Republic and Republic.co. Nothing discussed should be construed as legal, tax, accounting, or investment advice. The views of the presenters may not be the views of Republic and its affiliates. Always consult with trusted professional advisors before making investments. Private investments are inherently illiquid and may result in a total loss. All rights reserved.